Hi, my name is Dave Reske, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Rich Manders. Rich, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. Rich has quite a background. He's a serial entrepreneur, a lifelong learner, and a student of business. He's dedicated to helping other CEOs and their leadership teams scale their business and their personal freedom simultaneously through coaching and development through his business Freescale Coaching. We're going to talk a lot about that. Rich, that sounds like a fantastic vision for what you're trying to do. Rich in the past was also the co-founder of iAutomation, where he grew sales from zero to become an industry-leading company with over 160 employees and about $80 million in revenue. So you've done it yourself and grown and been an entrepreneur, and so I'm sure you've got a lot to share with a lot of your clients. So
glad to help any way I can.
So Rich, just to get started, I'd like to start these conversations with smashing a myth about business. And in your experience, with working with CEOs and with founding teams, you said that the things that work when you're small are the things that kill you when you grow. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting paradigm that most people don't really grasp, but are the things that cause companies to really struggle or stall out or actually fail along the way. So what I mean by that idea that the things that work for you when you were small will kill you when you get larger, is this idea that in the beginning, when you're a startup and in the early days, the company tends to celebrate the heroes. And the heroes are these people who will go through extraordinary efforts to win a sale, to make a customer happy, to deliver on time, et cetera, along the way. And that's important and necessary when a company is small. But when it gets bigger, it becomes more and more of a challenge. I'll give you an illustration with a company that everybody knows. So I think anybody who's listening to this podcast would know who FedEx is. And I remember I read this in the biography of the founder, that in one of the biggest mistakes that he had made was, as they grew the business, they would every day have a daily huddle where they bring everybody together. And then every week they'd have a longer meeting where they'd review the numbers and so on, and celebrate somebody who's done something that is fantastic for the business. And so one of these meetings in the early years, there was a guy who was a delivery guy out in his van, picking up the packages from companies and those little boxes that are on the corner, the FedEx boxes that in most major cities. And the thing that they were celebrating was this guy who was driving the van. It was in a snowstorm. I think it was Philadelphia. And he gets to the box and he tries to open the box and the lock is frozen shut. And so what he does is he takes initiative and he says, well, I can't get this box open, but we got this thing's full of boxes. We have to get it out. So I got to bring it back home. And so what he did was he turned his van around and smashed it into the box, knocked it off its concrete footings and threw it in the back of the van, and drove to headquarters where they cut it open and the packages made it. And so Fred did this job of calling out that this was such a great thing that this guy did and so on. Fast forward the following winter, when a snowstorm came along and a bunch of the mailboxes, they couldn't get into them, the locks had frozen, that all over the city, not just in Philadelphia, but other cities, they started knocking these mailboxes off of the blocks, causing millions of dollars of damage. And so the moral of the story is that while it was great that that guy did it that one time, making it that the way that you solve problems through these heroic efforts is not the way. You have to work on processes and systems that solve that. In other words, figure out how to make the lock not freeze, right? As an example.
That's a great story. So those heroes, don't you want to celebrate those heroes throughout your growth, or do you not need heroes anymore when you get bigger?
You don't need heroes. And here's the problem, right? So all the people that helped you get going lived in that ecosystem and were rewarded for being heroic. And now as you grow the business, the people who are running the departments and are the leaders, really what they need to do to make the company strong and resilient and more profitable, et cetera, is to figure out how to build the right systems so that those things never happen. These emergencies don't happen. The 99% of the business's throughput happens according to the plan. And then, yeah, once in a while you need a heroic effort, but if you need heroic efforts all the time, and the challenge leaves that those people who are used to being rewarded for being heroes and get their sense of value have a hard time making that transition into this process-oriented business.
So let's talk a little bit about that. You've worked with dozens of companies as a coach. So you've probably seen small companies, right? Let's say you get a company with 10, 20, 50 people, and they've got these heroes that are making it all work. How do you transition that culture from one of like with the heroes, diving in, solving the problems, slaying the dragons, to one which has got systems and process? What happens to those heroes? Do they smoothly make the transition?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I would say that it breaks down into a third, a third, and a third of like what the outcomes are. So there's about a third of them that once they become aware of this challenge, that like if you're creating mini crises all through your department, which then cascade out into the business, that it's really hurting the business. Because with every hero rescue comes a lot of expense and disruption, right? You're shipping things overnight, you're giving people refunds, you're doing, buying plane tickets last minute, whatever has to happen. And so by just becoming aware of it, they realize, okay, I've got to shift the way I think. So that's one group, about a third of them. Another third, they're not happy in a company where like continuous improvement is the drumbeat. They're going to want to go to another startup where that value is out there to really be a hero again, right? And there are certain people who just are great at startups, but not good at scale-ups, and vice versa, right? So they leave and go find another startup or thing to do. And then there's another third which decide to stay in the business, but more on a frontline role, so where that high energy transactional stuff happens. And it basically breaks down that way, but they're usually not holding the role that they used to hold in the organization. If they were like the director of sales or the head of logistics, they're probably going to be working further down in the organization, and you'll need a leader that's got a process orientation behind them on top of them.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, it's easy for me to conceive of those kind of people in a sales role, but in your experience, those kind of hero people, are they all throughout the whole organization? Are they in operations and finance?
So operations, I've even seen it in finance, right? Where they're, scrambling last minute to, they don't realize that the accounts receivable is growing, and now they're in a scramble mode to pick it back up. It really does happen in almost every single part of the business, obviously very often in the production side of things. Even I've seen it, we have had quite a few clients that are software as a service businesses, so their product is software. And even then, the process of fixing things and continuous improvement of the software should be a smooth process, and often is lumpy with a firefighter at the helm.
So how do you start to kind of transition from that culture to building those systems and process that provide that success?
So the first step in the process is to get everybody to agree on what the machine is that they have. And so the way you do that is you basically work with a big giant wall and sticky notes or a whiteboard. And you, with the team, you say, let's map out how we do things in our company and in our department. So there's like a macro version of this. We call it a key process flow map. So there's the macro version, which is we got to sell something, then we got to create it or deliver it or manufacture it, and then we have to deliver it, then we have to collect the money, and then the money goes in the bank account and we do that. And then there's the ancillary functions of people, accounting, and maybe R&D that feed the machine, right? That's like the macro key process flow map. And then every department has its own flow map. So sales typically is connected to marketing. So there's somebody who's generating leads, which then leads to a dialogue with a customer of some sort, and maybe a demo, then a quotation, then a close closing, et cetera, and that's the sales team. And then there's an implementation team that would then do that, et cetera. So having the team just put it up on the wall, say, this is step one, this is step two, this is step three, et cetera, and then say, who owns all these steps? And then the really interesting part of it is to have them color code how well these things are working currently, right? So for example, in that sales version, right? If you're not getting enough leads, that would be either yellow or red. And so yellow is it's cause for concern, and red is it's not working, it's hurting us. And then of course there's green, which means it's doing well enough for what we need, and super green if it's crushing it and it's ahead of everything else. So in that sales example, marketing being super green, they're generating tons of leads, but sales can't process them, would show you where the problems are. So that first step is just getting everybody to agree, what's the machine, who owns what, and what's the status of those things. And getting them to start to think about it in that systems framework. And then later on saying, okay, now almost every client we've had since we've begun, we've had about 40 coaching clients in the last 6 years or so, is that they typically want to double in about 3 years. That seems to be the underlying driver for them to hire a coach, is I want to double the business. And then there's usually a something when that happens. Maybe we want to exit the business and monetize it. Maybe we want to get outside capital at that point, or maybe we want to pass it to the next generation of the family, whatever. So you say, okay, that's how that machine works and that's the status. What happens if we double what goes through this machine? And that drives a whole bunch of interesting conversations. And so they start to see what's the machine they built, and you start to ask those questions. If this place burned down and you were going to redo it, the most effective, best way, forget about all the personalities in the room and the infrastructure that you currently have, is this the right machine to take us to double where we are today? And that drives a lot of conversations and an awareness that you really do have a machine here that you need to maintain and improve over time.
Yeah, and that sounds like a really logical process and very systematic. But I imagine there's a lot of personalities involved in that. What has to happen, kind of in the mind of the CEO to kind of go from this culture of, heroics? They're probably one of the biggest heroes, right? They're the ones who are like slaying the dragons and making it happen.
They're the worst. And so firefighters hate that whole exercise because they're like, what are we doing this? There's usually, while we're trying to do this, their cell phones burning up and people are knocking on the door that there's an emergency on the other side and they're itching to get out and fix it. And I'm like, no, you got to focus on it. So what leads to getting there, I think was your question, like getting people to even have this conversation, is usually frustration, right? That we are not hitting our profitability targets. It's getting harder and harder to continue to scale the business at the same rate. Because let's just say that you just want to grow at 20% a year, right? Which is pretty healthy growth. But if you want to grow at 20% a year, when you start compounding that each year, growing 20% a year, you double the business every, about every 3.5 years, you've doubled the business. And so with that comes this complexity, which starts to just mean everybody's killing themselves to get things done if you have an inefficient machine. And so they usually are coming to us because they see where they want to go. They are hitting some kind of wall that's out there. Sometimes they've hit the vein in the market and they've hit the tipping point. And like all of a sudden they went from doing, $1 million a month in business to $4 million a month. And then the wheels come off of everything, unless you really have a robust system and a good people system that wraps around that to get it going. So almost always it's the firefighters hate it. The CEO is usually one of the firefighters. So you have to get them to start thinking differently and not working the problems, not working in the business, but getting outside of it and working on the business and working on the design of how things work.
Well, it sounds like having a coach can be a great way to help them make that transition and get through there. And that's what you do for a living. Tell me about your story. So you were CEO, you grew this company, you were going great gangbusters. And now you're in this other role where you're helping other CEOs. So how do you compare those two roles? Which do you like better? Like how did
this
you
is
make
the,
that
this is the
transition?
Best job I've ever, this is the best job I've ever had.
Oh, that's great.
So I'll give you a little backstory. So serial entrepreneur, I've been an owner in about 7 different businesses over time. Some acquired, some started up cold, et cetera. The last business that we had, the iAutomation, which you mentioned earlier, that was a cold startup. We had no customers and we started from zero. That was in the industrial automation business. So robotics and automation. So software, hardware, et cetera, to make different kinds of products, semiconductor chips, DNA sequencing, things like that. So that was the business model. And there were two big, and that business was a home run, grand slam home run compared to the other ones. And there were really two reasons why that was the case. Three, we were in the right place at the right time. I don't want to discount that that was part of it as well. The first one was pretty early on in running this business. We started it in 98. I got a postcard to go to a meeting with other business owners from this group called EO. And by joining a peer learning group, one, I discovered I wasn't the only person who was suffering the same problems. And I was the world's worst firefighter. So I would have thrown up all over what I just told you as well. But having other peers to learn from became one of the biggest parts. And during that time that I was joined EO, I went to a university and I saw a guy speak who wrote a book called Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, this guy, Bernd Harnisch. And he studied the Rockefellers, which are the biggest wealth builders of all time. And what he found was that there was 10 habits that they built in all the businesses of the companies that they owned. And he turned that into a system. And so I applied that system to our business with my business partner, Wayne. And that was a big differentiator in how well we ran the business. And that's the foundational part of what we teach clients in the beginning, which is a one-page plan that describes who we are, where we're going, how we're going to get there, who needs to do what, and what's most important right now, right? If you can answer those questions and everybody in the company answers in the same way, you win. So was the foundational first push. And then the second push was about halfway through the business, was about 10 years old. We went out and got outside capital through a private equity fund. We ran a process and got bidders for our business. And the company we chose from all the bidders was a company out of Cleveland and New York City called Riverside. So we were like the, I don't know, 200th or 300th platform acquisition they had done. They've been around for 25 years. We're in the top 10% of all private equity funds. And they had a model where it was from every day and every week mapped out for 5 years, what you're going to do to make the business more valuable and easier to run. And so we were the beneficiary of a lot of learning from those folks. And the first checkbox on their list after hiring, making sure that you had a top level CFO, was the CEO needs a coach. And we were co-CEOs, my business partner, Wayne and I. And so we each got a coach because we were too cheap to do it when we were self-funded. But now that we were spending other people's money, we're like, heck yeah, whatever they say. So we both got coaches, and it was such a huge advantage to have somebody outside the company who was experienced and knowledgeable about business, asking us the questions about why did you behave that way? Why did you think that way? What were the things that you were doing? And bringing us frameworks and expertise from outside of our business and helping us grow. And so that's how I learned about coaching, which helped us at the second. And we were able to return roughly 6 times the money back to our investors, the private equity guys, when we sold in 2017. So it was a fantastic lesson that worked.
Yeah. Wow. What a powerful story.
When we were working with the coach, I just said, well, after we got bored from being retired for a couple of years, I was like, what those guys did, that looks like a cool business. Let's do that. And so that's how we ended up in the coaching business, helping other people do what we did just faster and better.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I want to talk more about that. But when you were taking on the coach for the first time, how did that feel? Was that an easy process? Was that an easy transition for you? Or did you kind of like it? And or were you challenged and kind of resistant to their ideas of,
I was a little challenged and resistant, right? Like, how could they know? But here's the funny part. Like, how could they know to tell me what to do to run this business that I put my heart and soul into for 10 years? And the reality was, you don't have to know the business at all, because the problems that cause a business to struggle to scale or make it hard to operate are universal. Doesn't matter if you're an insurance company or you're making, iPhones. It's, getting all those people to answer those questions the same way in the organization, the who are we, where are we going, how are we going to get there, et cetera. And so having this mirror reflecting back on you, anybody who's watched a video of themselves speak is always like, that doesn't sound like me. It was very powerful for getting better. Fortunately, we had gotten to take enough money off the table that we didn't care if they fired us per se. We didn't want that to happen, but it and so that helped us with saying, okay, we're on this new adventure with these new people and this new way of working. And so it was easy for us to adapt for the most part, but a little tricky when the feedback was tough, which it was plenty of times.
Yeah, and I imagine that's part of the point, right? You need that powerful feedback in order to make the changes, in order to grow your business, in order to take it to where you want it to go, right?
As a coach now, when I am talking to a CEO about working together, one of the lines we use is, or one of the things that we're focused on is making sure that we're in 100% alignment with that founder or CEO or owner of the business as far as what the outcome is that they're really, really committed to, because it's going to be hard along the way. Go back to that story of all those firefighters who helped you get your business over the wall and being profitable and moving along. And now some of them are misfits. How hard is it? I had to fire the guy who was the best man in my wedding, right? And I waited way too long and built up so much animosity, right? It was, and having coaches like, why are you doing? What's behind that? Without it, I never did, I just let it stay. And so it was that push that really got you to make those decisions that you couldn't get otherwise. So if the owner of the business and we are 100% aligned, that gives me permission to go, if you were that guy, to go, Dave, you told me this was important to you to get to X, Y, and Z, and what you're doing is taking you the other way. I want permission to kick your ass. Hopefully that's okay on your podcast. I want your permission now. And if you can't give me that permission to like get in your face and go, what the heck are you doing? It won't be a great coaching relationship. So we have to be connected together on some outcome that will matter to them and to us in order for this to work.
Yeah, it sounds like it can make a huge difference in the personal and professional life. Tell me about the personal side. So it sounds like part of what you want to do is help the entrepreneur achieve some personal goals as well as the professional goals. And does it blend coaching or is it really just totally separate?
No, it's all together, right? So one element of what I said of this future together is around the business, right? There's usually some specific goal, some outcome we want to get to, a certain amount of profits or a sale price that's between X and Y or whatever. But as important is what do you want your life to look like when it changes? Because your life will also change dramatically. What you're doing day to day changes dramatically over the course of doubling your business when it's, that size. And so we have all the CEOs spend time and write out a vivid vision or a painted picture, come from Cameron Harold's book, Double Double, that helps us together co-create what's this future that they want. And so there's questions in there about what do you want your calendar to look like? Who are you spending time with? What kind of accomplishments do you want to have made during this time? Who are the people that you want along on the journey? And how do you want to take care of them? And what's going to mean for them to be part of this journey? So, really describing the outcomes of the journey from a perspective of like, I'm waking up 3 years or 5 years or whatever your time horizon is from now. What's my life like? How am I spending my energy? what am I focused on? What have I, when I look back, what am I really proud of, et cetera, and putting that all down. And now I dust off that pretty often. And especially when you go drifting off and do, hey, I'm going to start another division over here doing some crazy thing that won't make money for 10 years. And I'm like, wait, that doesn't fit the picture. Were you lying or did you, you know, or what, right? Were you making this up? And dragging them back into the focus that they set up.
Yeah, that sounds very powerful and very challenging, and a lot of deep conversations, I'm sure, happen along the way.
Yeah, well, you have to be comfortable with confrontation, right? Because, and that's true with everything. If there's a, you know, the other myth, but or not really a myth buster, but a universal truth, is that it's the conversations that you don't have, but you know you should, that kill you in the end.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is having with people that you love or that you really care about, giving them the real hard feedback when they need it.
That sounds like an entire other podcast episode we should have sometime, Rich. That's really powerful. Well, you know, we don't have time to go a lot into your coaching methodology, but give me the short story of that. Like, so how do you engage with your clients, and, you know, how do you make this transformation happen with them? Because it sounds like, I mean, from the outsider's perspective, it sounds like you're almost taking over the company and running it, but you can't. You're the coach, right? How does that work?
Yeah, no, we definitely don't take over the company. What we are doing is we're teaching an operating system. So if you think about it from a different way, every business has an operating system. It's usually not created with any form of linear thought. It's like, we need to put a lid on this. We need to put a lid on it, figure this out, right? And so on. And what we're doing is we're doing an operating system upgrade. So that involves really simply getting everybody in the company to answer those six questions I said earlier the same way, along with the sixth one is, what's my role in moving us towards the future we just described, right? So what are the metrics or KPIs that I own? What are the projects I'm undertaking? And how do I fit into the tribe that we are creating that differentiates us from others out there, right? And so that's, does everybody even agree who we are, where we're going, how we're going to get there, right, et cetera? I've never yet seen a company that we started with that they've got all that figured out. They usually have one or two or three of the things figured out, but there's other parts. Figuring out how to get a strategy that's differentiated and special, so you're not defending yourself by trying to get to be the lowest cost provider, unless that's really the way that you're focused on getting to the market. Getting the teams learning and growing so that their capacity continues to flourish inside the business, that they have enough capacity to deal with the future, which does mean being able to make that transition. If you think about somebody who's been in a business for a long time, they've probably made the transition. They were hired as a doer, whether it was a bookkeeper or a machinist or a salesperson or whatever. And as the company's grown, if they grew with the company and moved up, they move from being a doer to somebody who tells other doers what to do, to then someone who's managing a manager, then someone who's managing a leader, and someone who's managing a designer, right? So you kind of move through these phases and the job is completely different in every single one of them. When you're a sales guy, you're a dragon slayer. Go out and close sales. Now, being the leader of a sales team, right, the manager of a sales team, now it's about doling out the territories and making sure their quotas are right and helping rescue, you know, complicated deals and all of that stuff and teaching the system. And then the next level up is like, we're working on helping the managers manage better, right? And then beyond that is like helping a leader manage better, right? And leaders, in my definition, is a leader of managers, right? And so having them be aware that these are transitions that you go through and that everything that you need to do that worked in the one below, most of it doesn't work at the next level, is, and what do you need to change, is part of the underlying structure of being able to build that infrastructure to make the business grow. And just having everybody on the same page, how to do meetings effectively, create dashboards and things so you can see what's going on from the business, getting to leading indicators, knowing, being able to predict the future as much as possible, are all important elements of having a really strong company down the road, right? It's rising revenues, rising profits, predictable business model, a large marketplace that you have lots of room to grow in, and a model that is repeatable and scalable that gives you a differentiation in the market, which is generally measured in higher profitability than your peers.
Yeah, it sounds like quite an operating system, quite a difference that you make in these companies.
All the way back to the Rockefeller book, what they did was any business that they kept had to get to at least three times the industry's profitability. And their target was 3 to 5. And if you do that, and that's what our target is with every client we work with, is what's your industry's profitability? And now our discussions are around how can we get to 3 to 5 times that? Because at 3 times, you have such an amazing strategic advantage in your marketplace because you can hire ahead of needing what you need, right? Which means you've got capacity to work on the future. You can hire better people because you can afford them than everybody else, who tend to perform at many multiples of an average person. You're able to weather financial storms without cutting into the flesh and bone of your business. And when you do acquisitions, once you figure everything out, and you can take a company that you buy and make it 3 times more profitable than it was when you bought it, you're actually, even you can pay them a fine price for their business, but then you can make it unbelievably profitable arbitrage wise for you, right? So that's like the underlying engine.
Wow. Yeah, there's so much to learn from that. That's really good. Rich, has been a really powerful conversation. I am personally challenged in so many ways. There's at least 3 books that I'm going to read based on just some of the things that you mentioned. So I really appreciate you sharing all of that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Sounds like you're making an amazing impact in the world, through the businesses that you're coaching, through the CEOs, the leadership teams, and all their employees. So that's got to feel really good for you.
Yeah, that is our metric, is how many lives are we positively influencing through our work. Yeah. And when these folks gain skills that are working in these companies and they make more money and they are more satisfied with their work, it translates to all kinds of benefits.
Yeah. Amazing. If someone wants to get in contact with you to learn how they can work with you, how should they do it?
So it's freescalecoaching.com is the website. And my email is rm@freescalecoaching.com. There's a whole bunch of resources there you can download and take for free. Pretty much everything we do, we put out there.
Great. Rich, thank you again for taking the time today. You've given a lot of insights and I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.